copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Welcome to this last session here. And in this last session, Martin and I want to, with you together, we want to look into the future. What are the main issues that we will be facing? Pardon? Crystal ball, yes. So in 10 years, you could stone us or you could lift us up on pedestals. But this is just our humble attempt at anticipating what is going to come our way in the next 10 years. Some of it is already here and will increase. So let me give you, because I'm a Schindler, I have a list. Let me give you my my list, the issues that will face us from outside of Europe and then issues from within. First of all, migration of peoples from other parts of the world. Migration is the catch-22 issue. In Europe, most of our cultures, because of affluence and education, are declining in population, which is bad for our economies. We need people to fund our economies, and we ourselves do not have the childbearing strength or will to do that. You need 2.1 children per childbearing woman to keep the population growth on an even level. So in Germany, it's one child per childbearing woman. So we're under that. We're in a negative growth. So we will need many, many people from other countries to come into our cultures and countries, which means that we will be facing many foreigners coming to us. We're already seeing economic migration, many Spaniards coming to Germany, many young Spaniards. I think the unemployment rate amongst young Spaniards is almost
30%.
55. Oh, it's even worse than I thought. And many of them are coming to Germany to find jobs. In the next 10 years, 80% of the population increase, 80% of the increase in Europe will be resultant from immigrants that come to us. But many of these people will already be followers of Jesus. We will not have to lead them to Jesus. We will need to find them and then sponsor them and empower them to do ministry in our countries, both to their ethnic groups and to our own nationalities. Sometimes these people are much more bold than our own people in sharing the gospel and planting new churches. But what they need are shepherds or sponsors, gatekeepers that let them in and help them to integrate. Christianity is a migratory religion and has been from the outset. Is what one author says. Being a missional church involves developing creative strategies for partnership and outreach to newly formed migrant congregations. Stephen is working with people from Brazil who are coming to Croatia or to the Baltic countries who want to evangelize and plant churches. We will have Africans that will help us plant churches in our cultures. So we need to be aware of that. We need to partner with them. We need to take on a learning posture. We are not the ones that will tell them, but we will learn from them as well. Another aspect of what we will be facing in the next 10 years, and this will be a delight to Östin's heart, that we will be dealing with the Pentecostal phenomenon. The growth in the evangelical world will come from the Pentecostals and the Charismatics.
Non-Baptists,
yes.
The Pentecostals.
Yes.
what? Now you got him all excited over here.
Yeah. Yes, Seth. Those are challenges for other evangelical groups to with a kingdom heart to say, we welcome you. We are glad that you're here. We want to be brothers and sisters, even if we are theologically from different camps. We want to support one another. But that will also bring among the Pentecostals in our countries new challenges. They will have to learn how to deal with other groups that come into their fellowship or into their networks. One of the biggest challenges for Pentecostals is to be persevering. In their movements, they have a new vision every 6 months or so. So they are very, they hop around in terms of vision and energy expended. What they need is consistency over the long haul, despite the new visions that will be coming. You need to be consistent, especially in church planting. That's why it's good to have Östin and Seth and others who say, we are holding up the banner for church planting over the long haul, despite the new visions that will be coming.
What do you think, why Pentecostals, not like Catholics? What's so unique?
Well, even within the Catholic Church, there you will have charismatic renewal groups that are very dominant. I believe that because of the Pentecostals and charismatic emphasis on the Holy Spirit, they believe more than we believe in the evangelical world that God is at work and will work. They act on what they believe much more than we do in our traditional evangelical settings. We over-educate, and maybe they are, in some aspects, they over-activate. That is a simplicity that I'm just saying, but maybe we need to be more active in other evangelical groups than...
And maybe my observation is that they have a heart for the poor.
Yes.
Whereas the established denominations and churches are at a higher level of society and are not engaging at that level.
Exactly. I mean, you can gauge the socioeconomic status of your community by the number of Pentecostal churches in that community. The more Pentecostal churches in the community, probably, in most instances, the lower the socioeconomic level of standard of living is. Because what Pentecostals preach more than any other group is hope. And that's what people who are down and out need more than anything. They need hope. So, but that's the gospel. Gospel is hope. Global poverty. Global poverty will send us a tsunami of poor people that's already happening to Europe, Eastern and Western Europe. Global poverty will give us these people, and our governments are trying to find out how to deal with that even now. Those are issues from without, outside of Europe, that will be that we will have to deal with in the next 10 years. What are the issues within Europe in the next 10 years that we need to deal with? Well, postmodernism will challenge us to show how the lordship of Jesus is freedom with a new non-rational apologetic. The thing that postmoderns, what makes them up, some of the characteristics is that they live for momentary pleasure. But if you live for momentary pleasure, this is what will happen. You will be desensitized to pleasure. The more pleasure you have, or pleasure-oriented you are, the less pleasure you will experience. And that's why you will succumb to violence and extreme sexual practices in order to experience pleasure again. We have in Germany, in Berlin, we have 11 and 12-year-old children who are having sex all the time, but without any sense of pleasure. There is no pleasure in what they are dead to the pleasure experience of sexual encounter. And they will become violent in order to experience pleasure. And they will do violence to themselves as well. So momentary pleasure, they reject a meta-narrative. There is no overall narrative anymore that would make sense of where they're living in life today. They live syncretistically. They draw from a multitude of philosophies and religions, and they basically do a patchwork of whatever they think is their God. They will have that as a God. They reject the law of non-contradiction, which says that two opposing theories can't be right at the same time. There has to be a right and a wrong. They reject that. They say, no, you can have multiple truths and hold those in tension. And then they are very full of cynicism because they have been hurt by parents and others, and they have been taught that there is no reason to trust. There is no reason to trust. So relationships are periodic. They enter into, they exit relationships on a utilitarian basis. There is no reason to trust another person. It's all about me. And that will lead to isolationism and ultimately depression. These people will be, they will go to the high priests of our culture, the psychiatrists and psychologists, no longer to the pastors, because they are the new gods of hope. Isolation of the individual, locking into his prison of the internet, we will find we will need to find ways of reaching the isolated via the medium of the internet. The medium that has isolated them from society is the medium that we will use to engage them in the gospel. They are the people of the future in the next 10 years. They are non-religious. They are religiously non-religious, but they are very spiritual. If you ask them, tell me about your spirituality, they will give you an answer to that question. In Sofan, living in a postmodern age is a wonderful time to live if you're an evangelist. If you're not preaching an institution, but a viable relationship with a living God who knows what it's like to love and to have hope and to fix the brokenhearted. We will deal with the dominance of Islam. I believe in the thesis of Huntington, the Harvard philosopher, who said that the future of Europe will have to do with the culture wars and have to do with the predominance of Islam. We have yet to find ways of effectively evangelizing Muslims in Europe. Nobody is doing it well. And they will grow because they're having the children. And they will become very, very violent and very offensive in their outreach. Then gender identity, how will we reach the gays, the lesbians, the different genders. We will have to deal with that in a way that is loving and yet in a way that is healing, and that will have to do with community. What they're actually looking for is community, and we can give that to them. What about the issues of the heart that we will be facing? We will be facing the phenomena that I would call anhedonia. You know what hedonism is? It is living for pleasure and joy, happiness. You know, Pharrell Williams, happy, that's all over the place. That is a reflection, actually, of a hedonistic culture. The downside is anhedonia. If you live for pleasure, the downside is you'll get to the point where you will no longer be able to experience pleasure, which is the next step toward depression. So we will, despite wealth and prosperity, people will increasingly be unable to experience joy and a deep sense of well-being, which is actually shalom. Shalom, God's sense of well-being despite outward circumstances is what God wants to gift every person with. But we will rediscover shalom for this postmodern society. Issues of the heart and hedonia, the inability to feel pleasure and joy despite the prosperity. Secondly, emotionally absent parents, often occupied with themselves at the expense of their children. Parents who need parenting, who do not know what it's like to be a parent because they've never been parented. They come from dysfunctional homes. And this will create, we will learn to have church that is a home for the emotionally homeless in our generations. And that will be increasing. Children and young adults who are emotionally homeless. They have never had a home emotionally. They've had everything else. Look at this man he's a symbol, I think, of what will happen in Europe, in California, who as a virgin, 22 years old, he says, you know, virginity today is not a badge of honor. It's a badge of shame for our culture. So he had this badge of shame and pain because he was still a virgin. He said to everybody, he didn't understand this because he was a gentleman. He was no gentleman because of what he did. He proved that he was not a gentleman. He destroyed the beauty that he so wanted. And he was raised in affluence. He was driving the newest BMW that you could get. I wish I had that vehicle. He had everything that the world could offer him, and he was lonely, depressed, and angry. Behind depression, there is always anger. What is under, when you look at the bottom side of depression, you will find anger. Anger. And we will be faced with an angry culture because these young adults are emotionally homeless. They will be having it all and enjoying it less, suffering under material prosperity. Issues pertaining to church planting, we will learn to tackle the milieus in our countries. Many studies are being done today about the 10, in Western cultures, about the 10 different distinct philosophies of living that our cultures are made of. And you can look at this. Shell does extensive studies on the milieu, the milieus of our countries. And we will begin to plant churches for specific milieus. Right now in Germany, different denominations and federations, including my own, we are thinking about going into one large German city and planting 5 churches at one time, where each church plant would target 2 distinct milieus that the other church plants aren't able to target. So we would like to collectively plant 5 new churches to cover all of the 10 milieus in this city at one time.
Can you explain the milieu?
A milieu is a world in which we live. We don't no longer talk about class distinctions, upper class, lower class, middle class. We no longer talk about the young generation or the hippie generation or whatever. We talk about philosophies of living. I'll give you an example. In Germany, in Eastern Germany, about 7 to 8% of Eastern Germans are nostalgic day-day East Germans. They wish that communism were back. They mourn the loss of communism. They live in the past. In Poland, it's probably some of that is there too. So they say the best days of our culture is when communist ruled. And that draws them together. They could be old people that experienced the communist era. They could be young people who long for that they've never experienced. In Berlin today, there is about 10% of the population They call them experimentalists. Experimentalists. These are people in their, usually in their late 20s and 30s. They are single. They are very liberal, politically minded. They have multiple sexual relationships. They are creative people. They're in the arts. They're in the graphics, music, poetry. And they hang together in certain locations in Berlin. We have planted a church there called the Berlin Project for these people. 500 people attending their services right now. Amazing. Half of the people that attend the Berlin Project are from that milieu.
You put a link on this.
Pardon?
Can we find out what our milieu is?
Yes. You could look at the Sinus study, S-I-N-U-S. Google Sinus study, and you will find out what this looks like. They'll show you it looks like a brain, and with different sections of the brain for different.
It's like a sociological segment.
Yes. Sinus, yeah. We will need new evangelistic tools to reach the postmodern heart, and there the Alpha course will not do it because Alpha is propositional. You talk about Jesus, and the postmodern says, "I'm not interested in Jesus." You talk about the relevancy of the Bible, they say, "I'm not interested in the relevance of the Bible. I want to listen to my own heart." So we'll need new tools to reach the postmodern person. My Life Workshop, the thing that I've developed and that you can get a feel for this afternoon after lunch, is such a new tool, I think. And then we will have to learn to go from addition to multiplication in church planting. And that's the whole subject in and of itself. That's the movement leader's subject. We cannot do church planting the way that we have done it up to now. We must do it quicker. We must do it with more depth, discipleship depth, with shorter gestation periods. And we need to emphasize generations and not mother-daughter church planting. So those are some of the challenges that face us as evangelicals who are wanting to evangelize and plant churches. Now I want to give it over to my friend Martin, who has much more to say on these things than I do. So, Martin.
I agreed with everything he said. let's just think a little bit about the situation we're in. I actually do think it's a hopeful situation, but it does require a different approach from the church to be able to take advantage of this situation. Now, obviously, I'm speaking from a UK perspective, and I realize that's going to be a little bit different, because the good thing about the situation in the UK is that the church is increasingly evangelical. That's the Protestant church is increasingly evangelical, and is beginning to regain its confidence after a time of shock. So in terms of the circumstances in which we find ourselves, I think the dominant narrative since the 60s has been the narrative of the individual, and the idea that we talked about it earlier, the autonomous individual, the idea that you can only really be happy if you are free of all commitments, if you're free of all structures, if institutions aren't oppressing you. Now, the problem with that narrative is that, first of all, it's a consumer narrative. It's basically saying that you are the center of the universe, and your happiness lies in your own self-actualization. And in order to be self-actualized, you need to discover yourself, and you need to be in a position, you need to be wealthy enough to consume products of your choice. This is how you discover your identity. You express your identity through what you consume. Now, the problem with this narrative is that it reduces the individual to a situation where no relationships are valid. They're only valid in so much as they serve the individual. And in that situation, no institution can survive. So in Western Europe, every institution is under pressure. It doesn't matter if it's political parties, or if it's the Girl Guides, or if it's the church, or whatever it is. If it's an institution, even trade unions, you're going to struggle to survive. Because the narrative of the individual constantly undermines any kind of social organization. So, for example, when politicians in Europe say, in England, say to the church, oh, well, you're irrelevant because you've declined, my response is to say, well, what about you? You know, take the Conservative Party, for example, which in 1955 had 5 million members. Today, it only has 130,000. I mean, that's spectacular decline. The church has done really well compared with the Conservative Party. So every institution is under pressure. Now, the problem with all of this is that actually it's very difficult to maintain family life. It's very difficult to maintain marriages, because marriages only become useful in a consumer sense. I will stay committed as long as it's useful to my self-actualization. Well, there lies misery. And I think gradually many people in our culture are beginning to see that actually there's got to be something else, and there needs to be a way in which we can live in community. The deepest longings of those under the age of 40, the deepest longings are to have relationships of fidelity, faithful relationships lived in community. The problem is they don't think it's possible. But what the church can demonstrate is that it is possible. We do know how to live relationships of faithfulness in community, or at least we should be able to. Because the gospel message always points us towards community. God himself is community, and he calls us into a community of faithful service where individualism is surrendered in comparison to the lordship of Christ, and the lordship of Christ calls us to serve our fellow men. That's a different kind of society. So here's the challenge. As well as preaching the gospel, we're also being called to rebuild the foundations of Western civilization. Now, how do we do that? Well, I think there's three big challenges for each local church, and the three big challenges are this. First of all, we have to rediscover the nature of leadership. Leadership is not the traditional pastor teacher anymore. Leadership is not either the heroic individual. Leadership is about team. Leadership is about preferring the other. Leadership is about empowering others. Leadership is about living in a team community in such a way that we produce in the team the kind of culture that we want to see in the church. In other words, this needs to be the kind of team culture where actually we enjoy doing this. This ought to be fun. This ought to be something where we get a tremendous sense of pleasure from being with our fellow leaders. The second task then, beyond that of leadership, is How do we live an authentic life as a Christian community, which is not just passive? In other words, how do we move from a situation where those who come to worship are not just another version of consumers? How do we move from a situation where those in our churches are not just consumers of religious goods? How do we move to a situation where our natural expectation is that all people in the church have a ministry, and the function of the church is to help them to develop that ministry in such a way that the community we produce ought to tell you something about the message we preach? So you ought to be able to guess what the message is by looking at the community we produce. Part of that means the development of spiritual practices, a rhythm of spiritual life, which, to be honest, is often missing in churches today, and it's often missing amongst leaders today. So developing spiritual practices that reflect a rhythm of life that brings people deeply into an awareness and relationship of God and away from the hectic round of consumer busyness. And then the third priority for the local church is how to build a conversation with the local community in which we're located, which is more than simply the question, why don't you come to church? The question, why don't you come to church, is not a conversation. It's a cry of desperation. That's not the conversation we want. The conversation we want is much more like, what do you, the community, think it looks like to flourish as human beings? And how can we participate with you in that conversation? And how can we as the church begin to meet your aspirations in terms of what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to flourish as human beings? Now, that's a very different kind of conversation, and we're not used to producing that kind of conversation. I could give you an illustration of that if you like, but perhaps that's enough for the moment.
I'll give it.
All right, I'll give it. Since you ask.
Please.
Okay, when our local church first started, it started in our home, we moved into a community centre. And first of all, we were just renting a room in that community centre. Later, we were given the option of taking out the lease on the community centre. So we actually have the lease now for £1 a year. For the next 70 years, we have this building.
Yeah. Asset transfer?
No, we haven't. The asset's not transferred to us, just the lease. Okay. So we lease the building for the next 70 years for £1 a year. Okay, so it's quite a sizable building, and it comes with a lot of playing fields and parkland. Now, when we first moved in, we started to ask the community what did they think the needs of the community were. So we actually surveyed the community. What did they think the needs were? We also asked them what they thought of our church, and we didn't like the answers, actually. They had a very negative view of our church, for reasons which are complicated, but I could tell you. The results of the survey were not what we expected. The top need that they spoke about in this community was there were no play facilities for children under the age of 7. And we never thought of that, but actually when we looked around, we saw that was true. There were no play facilities. The second need they expressed was there was nowhere for people to meet, to just have a cup of coffee with their friends. And the third thing they expressed, we might have guessed, which was there's nothing for teenagers to do. So here's what we did. The first thing we did was we raised about €100,000 to build a top quality playground right next to our church facility. That amazed the community because they realized we didn't do that for ourselves, we did it for them. That surprised them. The second thing we did was we opened a cafe next to the playground. in order for parents who are coming to the playground to have a place where they can meet their friends. Today, 2,500 people use that community center every week. And that gives us an opportunity for conversations. So, in other words, by changing our relationship with the community, by changing the conversation, we've entered into a completely different relationship with the community. They now view our church extremely positively. If you go there on a week in the summer, provided it's not pouring with rain, that is, you'll see maybe 1,000 people in the park just using the facilities. And that gives us a basis for a totally different relationship. So that's just one example. I could give you many other examples as well. But those are the three priorities for me. A different kind of leadership. The kind of community that really genuinely reflects the message. And thirdly, a different kind of conversation with the community. If we can produce that kind of situation, I think there's a hunger for that in Western culture at the moment. And I actually think that the collapse of the story of individualism is actually a great opportunity for us with the gospel. Yeah.
How do you take the people then, like say the people that are going to the cafe or kids, how do you take them from that to actually share the gospel and get them into church? What's the big bridge?
Okay, well, first of all, we always ask the question, whatever the activity, and remember, we're open from 9 in the morning to 11 at night, 7 days a week, and there are different activities going on all the time. So we always ask the question, how do we enter into spiritual conversations with these people? Mm-hmm. So we actually work with our people to give them confidence to have spiritual conversations. And of course, most spiritual conversations begin with a question, not a statement. Actually, it's remarkable how often people will respond to that. Second of all, we always have prayer cards that people can fill in, prayer requests. It's amazing how many requests we get for prayer. And that's also an opportunity to go back and say, have you had an answer to that prayer yet? What's been happening in your life? Thirdly, we also have many, many courses. We do run the Alpha course, but we also run other courses as well where we can actively invite people to come to go the next stage if they're beginning to ask spiritual questions. We also have many events on a Sunday at church that would be the kind of events that it's easy to invite people to. Obviously, the big festivals like Christmas and Easter, but other times of the year as well, where we make it easy for people to invite people. So all the time, there's this kind of activity going on. And it's interesting, right now we find, we probably have about 200 people in our church, and on any given Sunday, I would say that maybe 10 or a dozen people, completely new people, just turn up. And a lot of that is because of the fact they feel positively towards the church because of all the things that are going on in the community. And I just feel that there is a huge change in the atmosphere throughout Britain anyway, or let's say in England, maybe not Britain, throughout England. There's a big change in the atmosphere, and I think it's coming all across Europe. It's not in every part of Europe yet, but I believe it's coming. Mm-hmm. And the question is, are we ready for when that change of atmosphere comes to take advantage of it? But I believe it's coming. Do you see it in Norway?
To a certain extent.
To a certain extent, yeah.
Can I add a comment?
Yeah.
I think in England, some of the change has been because there have been Christian organizations that have earned the trust of the police, local government, and non-Christian. So two of the big ones are street pastors who help initially with nighttime economy, picking up bottles, communicating with the police if there's a fight, helping people get home safely, giving out flip-flops, giving out lollipops so they lower the amount of noise in the neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And that, and they've started to get funding now from the NHS because the number of glass wounds in hospitals have gone down, so that saves the government money. That's one thing. And then food banks, which is emergency food for a week, and they can only get it three times a year, so it's not dependent. But that has increased last year in our city by 45%. And the government are embarrassed about it because they think Britain shouldn't need it. But the Christian Food Bank charity won Secular Charity of the Year last year with their training, safeguarding practices. And it's just raised profile of Christians. And also, we're not just doing do-gooders, but it's thought through and methodical, and we have policies.
Yeah.
I think we're now... So then the council came to our church, and our group of churches, saying, can you help us, please, with our youth provision, with fostering, with adoption, with caring for the elderly? They came to us, which is the first time it's ever happened in like 40 years or something in the city.
Yeah. So some the general point is being made that social action on the part of churches is earning a different profile, different respect from the community more widely. Yep, yep. So somebody's making the point that similar sorts of things are happening in Spain with the prisons, rehabilitation and food distribution, yeah. And it does change the reputation of the church when this happens over a period of time. That's very important. So the point's being made that it's important that it be every individual, not just the institution. Now, of course, the institution can only do it if individuals are involved. But and I agree with you, actually, completely. Interestingly, I came across a talk by a Roman Catholic missiologist, and he said that there, in his view, there have been four ages of mission. Now, this is a Roman Catholic perspective, but his four ages are these. In terms of who takes responsibility for driving the mission forward, he said the first age was the age of the bishops. The bishops were the great missionaries. Yeah, we can see that. Second, he said the monks were the next agents of mission from the Dark Ages onwards. And then thirdly, he would say since the Reformation, it's been the friars. In other words, not the monasteries so much as the traveling professionals, and the Protestant equivalent to that would be the mission societies. And he as a Roman Catholic, is now saying that the fourth age has just started, and the fourth age is the age of the laity, that it will be the laity that will carry mission, the lay people. That's an interesting perspective from a Roman Catholic, but it's absolutely right in terms of the laity. It has to be every member. Yeah, so the point's being made about the importance of space for recreation as part of a church plant. Interestingly, when we were offered the lease on this particular building, which came, you know, with a heavy responsibility, actually, because the previous people had lost a lot of money. So it's a big responsibility for a small church plant to take on. At the same time, the same organization that had the lease for this and was offering us the lease, they also offered us a purpose-built building that they would give us, and we could just have that for free. Now, we turned it down because, first of all, in our view, it was too small. It would only seat 100 people. Second of all, it would only be for religious worship. And we wanted something that was much more expansive than that. So we actually turned down the gift of a completely free, purpose-built worship center in exchange for just the lease on a community center. That was an interesting decision for the church to make, but actually it's proved to be a fantastic decision. Very, very interesting. And incidentally, we make money out of the community centre. It goes back into the community centre, but the point is that it frees up all the church resources for mission.
But they chose to use the building. You've worked, you've earned your testimony.
We have earned their trust, that's absolutely right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, so an idea to have coffee bars in shopping centres in Spain. Actually, that's done quite a lot in England. In fact, there's a Christian organisation that has a relationship with a chain of coffee shops called Costa. And they have ministry in those Costa coffee places. It's quite interesting. The man who runs that ministry nationally and who's actually employed by Costa Coffee to get Christian ministry going in these coffee shops has the very interesting name of Sid Latte. He was born for it, wasn't he? Very interesting. So another good example of social involvement, this time using sport to connect with people. Very interesting example. By the way, did you know that many of the English soccer teams were first of all Sunday school teams? Did you know that?
Manchester City,
Manchester United, Aston Villa. Yeah, they started as Christian Sunday school.
Barcelona.
Oh, Barcelona also?
Yes.
Yeah.
Ah.
Swiss missionaries.
Really? How about that?
The first 30 years.
Fascinating.
I find it interesting. I think I'm about where you are with every time we get onto the subject of this, then we all pull out examples.
Yeah.
And we can go around and around forever with examples of what's happening. But for the movement.
Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about. For the movement to happen and to the missional part of the movement.
Yeah.
And how that affects each other. That's really what we're looking. We're giving examples.
Yeah. Yeah.
But how can we get an institution to give up that into the individual?
Yeah.
So that as what our brother's been saying throughout the time, we have to reproduce the smallest cell to get the movement going.
Yeah. That's a good corrective to bring us back to the question of how do we get movement going. I mean, I think one of the fascinating things that I've seen in Europe, two things really. One is, I think the M4 emphasis on learning circles has been very, very good. And also, I don't know whether you got that learning circle idea from the European Church Planting Network, but they use a similar methodology. And I think using learning circles, especially across Europe, to encourage each other, I think that's got huge potential. Because often what happens in Europe is that we get stuck in our silos and we don't see the bigger picture. But in point of fact, if we could encourage each other, we could provoke one another to much bigger and better works than we currently manage. Because this is a fantastic time to be church planters. I don't think it's been a better time for 100 years. So let's rejoice in the opportunities before us. It's a fantastic time. But of course, what we're not good at in Europe is connecting outside of national boundaries. The politicians do it, the trade unions do it, the police do it, the television companies do it, even the mafia does it, and the Roman Catholic Church does it, but Protestant churches don't. We're very limited by our national boundaries, and that's a great pity.
Even in our country, former Yugoslavia, the six, there was one country, it's even divided by six, and you don't meet with other people. And I'm trying to work on this a bit, but we're going backwards rather than forwards.
Well, the liberals do it, the World Council of Churches doesn't.
To a limited extent, the liberals do it. Yeah, to a limited extent. Yes. It's more pronounced amongst the evangelicals that we have difficulty in making these connections. Okay, we have 10 minutes left. So are there any burning issues that we want to zero in on, or do you want to get in the lunch line first? Okay, first of all, when we said we raised, in the first case, 100,000 euros, actually, we didn't raise it from our church. Mm-hmm. We raised it from social agencies in the community. What we provided was the imagination and the energy to do that. Because it was a community cause, we were able to raise money from other sources. So, but what the Christians did was we had the imagination and the energy. Secondly, I would say that one of the things that we don't do so well is challenge entrepreneurs, successful business people, to be involved in church planting. We tend to think that church planters should be professional ministers, but actually, why don't we think of entrepreneurs being church planters? Because the point about entrepreneurs is that they have the kind of gifts that you need for church planting. And actually, what entrepreneurs will often do is they will think about the kind of businesses and enterprises that can actually be a mechanism for funding some of this stuff. We're not asking them in the first instance for their money. We're asking them for their giftedness. So let's start to look for successful business people and invite them to spend the second half of their lives in the world of church planting. That's another possibility. The more we're doing this, the more we're seeing resources released. But the third thing is to say, yeah, eventually we do have to build the kinds of churches that can release that kind of money. And in England, we're probably only just getting to that after quite a long period of time when we've been growing. So that does come to a certain extent as a second stage activity. So for the first stage activity, we have to be very enterprising. And that's a really good point. Why would somebody who's not even a Christian, why would they not give something to a good cause? And they will, in our experience. And what we've discovered is that a lot depends on the reputation that your church has. If your church has a great reputation in the community, then non-Christians are more inclined to give to those social causes. So, yeah, so that's a really good point. Thank you for that.
Because they also see already the impact in the area.
That's wonderful, isn't it? That's a great story. A story about people giving their time and professional expertise free. That's great. Our time is up. But yeah, okay. Lots of interesting things. So really appreciate all of your contributions. Thank you very much. The Lord bless you and keep you and make his face to shine upon you. Amen.